The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have an unusual show. I normally do a 40-minute interview with a specific company on a topic. Today we're going to slice it differently. We're going to have three entrepreneurs in the studio. They're going to talk about each of their companies and their product and how they can help my listeners. And then at the end, we're going to have kind of a free-for-all with throwing chairs and arguing and talking about being an entrepreneur in this town and the good and the bad and the ugly. And it's going to be mostly ugly, I think. I'm not sure. And so the three different companies are going to be here. And the first one is going to be a company called Shavira? Shavira, is that right?
Yes, Shavira.
Shavira. And the person representing Shavira is Georgia Weedman. Georgia, tell us about your company and about your background, please.
Well, I actually began this with a DARPA Cyber Fast Track grant. So I had some early ties to the government making something called the Smartphone Pen Test Framework to allow people to do testing around mobile devices, you know, kind of something a bit different than what we're used to seeing. So I guess last year took it to a place called Mach 37, an accelerator, and have been working on productizing it. I come from more of a technical, you know, research and development background of trying to turn it into products that governments and corporations can use.
So if you're listening to this interview and you're involved in a mobile penetration testing, you'd be a good person to get to know, wouldn't you?
Well, if you're involved in really any form of security, if you're in charge of the security of an organization, if you're a consultant who goes around and works with security at a lot of organizations, I think everyone who has any form of mobile, be it, you know, bring your own device, people bringing in mobile devices like phones or wearables or tablets, or, you know, you have a smart TV or someone brought in a video game console in the break room, anything that, you know, is a new kind of device. I think we need to be doing testing around those, and our traditional testing methods kind of leave those out.
So you did a bachelor's degree, and where did you do your master's degree at, and what did you study?
Well, I did my bachelor's at a place called Mary Baldwin College, which is in Virginia. And I actually went when I was 14. I went to a program called the Program for the Exceptionally Gifted at Mary Baldwin. So I graduated college at 18. And then went to grad school for computer science at James Madison, so also in Virginia. And from there, originally did some government jobs. As a contractor, went into doing, you know, more private space. And then,
so a good solid academic background. You know, working with DARPA is probably a good star on your forehead there. And then came up with an idea for a company. And then went to Mach 37 and said, "Hey, I got this idea. Can you help me out?" And they helped you out.
Oh, absolutely. It was a great program for someone from a very technical background to get me what I needed for the business skills, hook me up with the right people to help me, because now I have a CEO who has more of a corporate background than I do to help me make my vision a reality.
So you don't have a website yet because it's in development, probably available here real shortly. But if people wanted to find more information from you, you know, I just went into LinkedIn. I typed in Georgia and your last name, which is Weedman. Is that right?
It's Weedman, actually. A very common mistake.
Okay. And you get information on you and find out more about what your company can do.
Yes, absolutely. Anything on social media is a great place to find me. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Because the name is not radio friendly. It's Shevirah, but hey, something is good in radio, something isn't bad in radio. So who's your target user anyway for your software or your testing service?
Well, it's anyone who is at a corporation with any mobile devices or anyone that does consulting around security. So you probably think that most places have either like bring your own device or, you know, corporate owned user enabled devices. You know, there's a lot of fancy acronyms for it, but anyone who has mobile devices that may be causing risks in their enterprises is someone who could definitely benefit from this.
When my daughter graduated from high school, they wanted a quote, and she used a quote in Latin for "Who watches the watchman?" And what's interesting with you is that one of your capabilities is I can say, "Hey, I got this Gilroy software, and it protects your devices." You can say, "Well, let me test this." So you can actually test companies that have devices that protect mobile devices. Is that right?
Absolutely. So a lot of what we do actually is look at some of the security solutions. A lot of them have been basically retrofitted from your traditional computers, and they may or may not be effective in the mobile world. And really the only way to find out is basically take what they say on the back of the box, if you will, around security, and test to see whether you can bypass those controls, see whether they work. So that's a lot of what we do, is allow you to take, these are the solutions that we bought. Are they providing me, one, the value they say they're providing, and two, is that value that's helpful to my specific situation?
I had coffee with a friend of mine who bought one of those Volkswagen diesel motors. And what happened was representations were made about that motor, and then someone decided to test it. And guess what? They found out they weren't making accurate representations. So same thing with you. I can walk in and say, hey, I got this Gilco product that protects your all your phones, and someone like you can walk in and go, well, let's find out if it's valid or not. I think that's trust but verify, huh?
Absolutely, yes. It's anybody can say, you know, I've made super secure product that's going to save you from all of the bad stuff in all of the world. And the only way to find out whether any of that is valid is through testing. See if you can get around it. See if bad guys could also get around it.
Right. That's absolutely true. In martial arts, I like to test with knives that are blunt. And that's kind of a similar type thing, is test. So the general category would be mobile penetration testing. And but it's not just that. You can integrate it into the whole concept of risk management. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it starts from penetration testing, so finding vulnerabilities, discovering risks, and then, you know, taking it into risk management by, we're never going to be able to get rid of all the risk. Certainly not. The only way to do that is, you know, take the computer or the phone or whatever, you know, melt it down, smash it, bury it, that sort of thing. So there's going to be a certain degree of risk. People like to use applications. People send emails or text messages. They have video cameras and things on there. There's going to be some risks. But this allows you to get an idea of what your risks are and figure out how you can manage them effectively.
So this little startup incubator has different cohorts. And your cohort was in the spring of 2015, is that right?
That is correct, yes. Almost a year ago now.
And so have you had an engagement with the federal government, any of my listeners, any kind of experience working with them at all?
Well, we did start out with the DARPA Cyber Fast Track grant, but that was before Mach 37. We are currently looking for pilots. We've gotten our first couple of pilot users, but we're certainly looking for people, you know, not only in the corporate space, but certainly also in the government space, who are interested in and getting an idea of, you know, what their risk around mobile is and how effective their security controls are. So we would certainly love to hear from any of your users in the federal space.
Oh, I'm sure they can find you easily too on LinkedIn. One question I have for you is this whole concept of open source. I've done dozens of shows on open source and open software, and open data. And so at DARPA, it was working with open source. Then you made a transition to proprietary for this tool. Is that right?
Well, we still have the open source version, and we're still going to update open source, but we're also going to have a professional and enterprise editions. They're going to have additional features, additional automation, integration with other tools in the enterprise, just to make it easier. But there's always going to be the open source version just for, you know, the practitioner to use and learn how to do this kind of testing.
So this morning I was doing my research on your company, so I typed in SHEVIRAH, and I find an article from eWeek, and they talked very glowingly about you, about your company, about your product. So I was pretty impressed. I mean, it was laudatory, I guess. I don't know. When I talk about open source and mobile devices, they toss out this acronym or this abbreviation called MDM. Initially, it was mobile device management. Then people said, no, it's mobile data management. So what is a data device? Is it just a pain? What is it?
Well, like you said, it started out as mobile device management. And now, I guess, like you said, that acronym got taken over. So now we kind of think of mobile device management as enterprise mobility management, or EMM, which is a big name for a big group of controls around mobile devices, exactly the kinds of things that I'm trying to prove or disprove, as the case may be, about the effectiveness of those controls. In a lot of cases, it is just things that have been taken from the traditional computers world and, for better or worse, retrofitted into mobile, which may or may not be helpful to mobile devices.
So two questions for you before we end. Number one, did you go to the recent RSA conference?
I actually did not go to RSA. I sent the business side of my corporation and I stayed home and coded, which is a great thing about now having other employees is I can delegate that sort of thing.
Oh, that's good, good. And do you own an Apple Watch is really the question I really want to know.
I do not yet own an Apple Watch, but it is probably the biggest perk I have that a lot of these devices, be it like a smart toilet, a lot of the kids' toys like Hello Barbie or the latest Star Wars toys, smart TVs, wearables, all anything that's, you know, Internet of Things, that lovely, you know, buzzword, are things that I can write off as a business expense. So I have a lot of fun devices.
It's good. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're doing a show with three entrepreneurs today. We'll take a break and come right back. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's kind of a different show. Today we brought in three entrepreneurs to talk about how their products can make my listeners more productive. And the second company we are going to have in here is a company called Huntress, H-U-N-T-R-E-S-S, Huntress Labs. And we have Kyle Hanselvin, who's a co-founder of the company. Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
I'm doing good, John. I appreciate you having me.
Great, great, great. So tell us about your company and what value does it have for my listeners, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So like all companies, we start with a good background. So for the last 10 years, we've supported offensive cyber operations in the U.S. intelligence community. And we kind of knew firsthand what a breach meant to both the government and to commercial entities. So we sat back and said, hey, what would we do to catch ourselves? And that got us thinking, how would we actually detect when somebody compromises a computer? And what does it look like if we could detect somebody earlier than the status quo, which is about 200 days a breach goes undetected?
You know, in the commercial world, they talk about what is the cost of a breach. And I'm sure for some of the federal government, they probably fall off their chair laughing at that, saying, well, it could be nothing. It could be death. I mean, this is what you're dealing with. In the federal government, a breach could be death.
Yeah, and absolutely. Sometimes, though, it could just be as simple as the non-tangibles, the, you know, reputation that somebody takes a hit on by showing up in the news. That's more than enough to strike fear into a company. At the same time, some of the smaller mid-market companies, when their customers that they're servicing or, you know, doing outsourced IT for, when they get a breach, it means their cost of remediation goes up, maybe to a level they can't even afford.
So you've been involved with the Mach 37 folks as well. That kind of was the incubator that started you off with. Is that right?
Absolutely. So we're myself and three other co-founders, and we're technical engineers. We, you know, do reverse engineering software development, but didn't necessarily have the business chops it takes to be able to run a startup. So we reached out to Mach 37. It looked like the right program for us. And, in hindsight, it was the perfect thing for us to do.
Great. And so who's your target user?
So ideally, when we look at who really is affected by breaches, we see both government customers as well as commercial businesses. But more specifically, we think about who's actually doing the breach remediation or detection. And you know as well as I do that cybersecurity experts are kind of a hot commodity these days. So we focused on enabling the system administrators who might not have the cybersecurity expertise to still be able to do some of the breach detection and remediation that it would usually come from a much more expensive or maybe more well-trained in cybersecurity personnel.
So Kyle, I got up early this morning and I typed in huntresslabs.com. And the first thing I'm hit with is discover hacker footholds. And the next phrase is minimize dwell time, you know. And back when I used to work on cars, dwell time meant something when you're working on a car, completely different from what dwell time means here. So what's dwell time from your perspective?
Absolutely. So dwell time is that time between your host or an organization getting compromised and the time you actually detect that compromise.
So a zero-day attack would be would fit in this general category. So what is a zero-day attack in regards to dwell time?
Yeah, so whether it's a zero-day attack or maybe an unsophisticated phishing attempt, however they got in, it's when those hackers actually, you know, implant that host or establish that foothold that they plan to be there a long time. We started looking, what does that mean? You know, if I could actually detect you a little bit earlier instead of 200 days or get it down to maybe hours and days instead of months, you know, that's where we really focused on. So
if you're listening to this interview and the Baltimore Orioles are playing the Nationals and everyone's having fun and you're thinking about issues with managing, you know, your environment. And so this would be maybe a managed service provider would contact you, or what would be a typical engagement for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned before that, you know, although government and, you know, larger enterprises are definitely a customer we can have, where we've got the most traction is these managed service providers or people who provide IT to maybe smaller companies, maybe a couple hundred employees. And they've reached out to us specifically because they don't have the capability when something gets past antivirus, per se. You know, how are you going to detect that breach when it's made it past all your preventative security? Analogy we like to use is, you know, similar to that routine health checkup that you do with your doctor every year. Even though our capability is not going to detect that cancer, we're going to, you know, prevent that cancer from actually killing you or, you know, spreading throughout your network.
I got home at 10 o'clock last night and I was clicking through the TV and I saw some silly Star Wars thing and they talked about there's an anomaly in the blah, blah, blah. And then I read your website and you talk about anomalies too, huh?
Absolutely.
So how do you define that?
So a lot of technology depends on signatures and heuristics. How is the malware behaving or what does the malware specifically look like? Our approach takes a slightly different tactic to be able to identify. We're looking for those, you know, maybe something that stands out among frequency analysis. We try to look at a breach as a whole enterprise rather than just host by host.
So I don't walk out of your office with a box of, oh, that sounds so funny, a box of sealed software. So it's software as a service, or is this a management and a consulting engagement, or how's the typical engagement work?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a lightweight product, software as a service, and it gets installed on each one of your endpoints. So that's a laptop, a server, you know, a workstation that you take home, and, it's simply priced, available at $1 an endpoint a month. And that's part of our big value add to the customers that we were talking about.
Kyle, because this is radio, I got to spell your website so people who are listening can type it in, HUNTRESSLABS.com. And I see there's a couple levels. One is a business edition, one's MSP, one's a community, three different levels, or what are the different levels that are offered?
So right now we're, you know, heavily focusing on that small and medium-sized businesses. The reason why is it's kind of an underserved market that when they're compromised, that could mean the end of their company, rather than just the cost to bring in a remediation team. However, we're actively working on a community edition and an enterprise capability to support those other customers.
You have an Austrian name, so I'll pull a character from your historical background. Frederick the Great. Close, but not exactly. And Frederick the Great once said, if you defend everything, you defend nothing. So you prioritize your defense. Okay. And that happened effectively in 19th century Europe. But, you know, I think the defense for a network has to be prioritized too. And I think that's what's fascinating about your website. They say, look, we're going to prioritize the recommendations and get the most important on top.
Yeah, if there's anything we hear about over and over is a product that will deliver you nonstop, constant alerts, and you can't identify the signal between the noise. So we really specialized in giving a prioritized remediation recommendation. That's not, hey, you're compromised, here, go search it out yourself. It's here it is, step by step, so even a system administrator can go through and remediate that infection.
Because I think that's the problem. I mean, you can hire a consultant, Gilco consultant, to walk in, and what's the problem? Well, everything's the problem, and here's the bill. I mean, that doesn't solve any problem at all. I mean, what can I do today? What can I do in the next week? What about the next 90 days, the 30, 60, 90? And then is that the timing, or what's the typical timing for your recommendations?
Yeah, it could be simple enough of, hey, we don't see anything right now that's really going to, you know, hurt your bottom line, or we don't see something that's laterally moving. So maybe our first recommendation, you know, is not high priority. However, if there is some of those critical assets that are actively being infected, we do a great job of being able to say, this is the node, this is what's going to kill you. You need to take care of that now rather than wait on it.
I'm an old geezer. When I think of Symantec, I think of security, but Symantec is just so big it can't move out of its way. It's almost like a 400-pound guy. But in cybersecurity, you got to, zero day, that happened 24 hours ago. You really have to be agile and flexible and loose, and I think that's why companies like yours are more effective than the big lumbering giants out there. I mean, you can actually almost customize and move, and you can react to things that aren't imagined.
So agility is definitely something we have on our side. Don't get me wrong, there's still a good argument to have that layer of preventative technology. We like to see ourselves as complementing your existing investments that you have, whether that be antivirus or some type of host-based intrusion system.
So we can have agile, mobile, and hostile then, can't we? Cover all three. Do you have any on your website? Do they have like, can you test it out? Is there something to
Absolutely. So we make it as easy as possible. You know, right there on the front page, it says, hey, you want to give this a demo? You want to learn more? You click the link, it actually sends the data straight to us. And we've just started moving forward. You mentioned we joined Mach 37. That was only 6 months ago. And despite only being in business for 6 months, we've already started moving forward with some of our paid pilots. So.
Well, that's wonderful news. Yeah, I love to hear young, fresh companies that are agile, that can solve problems in a creative way, because one of my listeners maybe go to Symantec and say, hey, I've got this problem. Symantec is going to go, well, you know, we've got 50,000 things to worry about to put guys in the back burner. Someone like you is going to be hungry and aggressive and go, can I jump in right now? I mean, that's the best part.
No, absolutely.
Great. Well, we're going to end the interview here. And, oh, I got to ask you. Are you wearing an Apple Watch today?
So I'm not, but the wife just picked one up for Christmas.
So it's close, huh?
I'm holding off on waiting until we can put Huntress on my Apple Watch.
That sounds good. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. Going to take a break, come back, and talk more about maybe hostile and the whole idea of cohorts and new technology to help you. Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have a special program. We brought in three entrepreneurs who have three ideas for making your life easier, and we're talking to each person individually. And the third person up to bat here is Michael Wellman. He's the CEO and I think co-founder for a company called Virgil Security. Is that right, Mike?
That's right. I am the co-founder. I have a Russian-Ukrainian descent CTO.
That's interesting. So more information, V as in victory, V-I-R-G-I-L, security.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Great, great, great. So tell me about your company and tell me about who your target audience is.
So we started Virgil fundamentally so that any software developer building any kind of product, be that just an application, a web application, a mobile application, or you know, a product in the forthcoming Internet of Things where you're actually building hardware, anybody that's running software, we wanted to give them the ability to add better security to their products. We wanted to give them the ability to get away from using passwords, which is kind of the source of about 50% of all breaches nowadays. We wanted to give them the ability to encrypt literally all of their data. We wanted to let them be able to sign things so that they could prove that what they had came from the person that it claimed to be coming from and that it was intact and correct.
Interesting. And you were part of the Mach 37 group. When did that all start?
So through happenstance, I'd actually hired one of the partners at Mach 37 back in the early 1990s. And
that's a circle, huh?
We talked to him about, you know, he's one of the best security people I know, Bob Stratton. We went to talk to him about a couple of questions. And, you know, he pointed out that he was, you know, helping run this Mach 37 cybersecurity accelerator. We ended up joining it.
So if you're interested in learning more, stay tuned, because after the next break, we'll come in and we'll talk more and more about this whole incubator theory and pitching and funding and what it's like to be an entrepreneur. So is this like a secure sign-on play? Is that what this is?
No, it's fundamentally, nowadays, if you're building any kind of software product, and this is all the way down to like connected cars or the wearables, you actually start with other people's libraries or other people's APIs in the cloud rather than trying to write all of your own code. So, you know, the problem, lots of problems have been solved and there are people who have things online to help you solve them. So we give them libraries that give them this functionality so that they don't have to become security experts to do this. First time we added, encryption to one of our products, we did home networking products in the 1990s and 2000s. When you went to add that security layer to the stuff, my best engineers would come back 3 or 4 months later and go, I think I got this right. And, you know, so we wanted to give the people the ability to just have some libraries, have some online services, make a simple call and get back encrypted data or get back a yes or no. This is who it actually says it is.
I actually know the guy who wrote the code for Windows for workgroups, if you remember that far back.
I do remember that far back.
And who was that person who wrote that code?
I don't know that name.
He currently works for the federal government. Steve Van Roekel. Yeah, a little kid from nothing. He had nothing, and he's playing around with computers, and he came up with a good idea.
Well, if we're going to start that, I wrote code on the Lisa in 1983.
Oh, really, so. Really? That's not too bad. So tell us about your background.
Well, you know, now that I actually started the 1983 thing, you know, so coming out of college, I ended up, I was, you know, at Rice University in Houston, Texas. We were part of the backbone of ARPANET. So, you know, I actually pulled some of the cables for SESCONET, which became one of the backbone networks. So I got started in internet-related technology very early, went from there to working for an internet startup in 1990 in the area. You know, we grew that to 100 and some odd people, $12 million in revenue. ended up getting bought by PSINet, which was, you know, one of the first commercial internet ISPs. My engineering group ended up getting bought by Ascend, where we built the boxes you dialed into. So we had like 90% market share for dial-up. If you're dialing into PSINet, AOL, UUNet, you were talking to one of our boxes. In that same time frame, we actually wrote AOL's first Macintosh web browser. We did a web browser for Apple. And, you know, we just built networking products for 30-odd years. Every time we were building those products, we had to add authentication to them. We had to add encryption to them. And, you know, we got a lot of practice doing it.
So this comes under the general category then of like a cloud-based public key management. Is that the general category?
At the end of the day, that's really what the service we sell is that public key management. You know, people are trying to use things for like PGP for the last 20 years, but there's never really been a good way to do key discovery. But what we try to say is that if your end user or even your software developers have to know the phrase public key, then we're doing security wrong. So we want them to be able to actually send a message to someone, be that an email message, a phone message, or a text message. And if they know a phone number, an email address, or just a Twitter handle, they should be able to send that message, have it be encrypted, have it be verified the other person received it, and never know that there is a public key exchange involved. So if you look at like Apple's iMessage, we give almost every software developer the equivalent to do that on any means, channel of communication.
You know, with your background in both hardware and software and security, it would seem like if anyone can pull it off, it sounds like Virgil Security probably could.
You know, we actually had some other projects that we ended up doing where that helped us with that. After we did the early work in Wi-Fi, so like, you know, my team actually shipped the first two generations of Apple's AirPort. We went into doing things for dynamic spectrum access, where radios found unused spectrum. That was under a DARPA program. And in order for those radios to get deployed to the military, we had to go through NSA compliance testing. So, you know, we took our commercial background and applied that, you know, to what NSA thought secure meant. And, you know, now we're giving essentially everyone the ability to have NSA Suite B level compliance.
Well, that's great. So who is your typical customer?
Our typical customer is literally anybody who's writing software. And that software, like I said, could be a mobile application, a desktop application. One of our customers right now that we're working with is building smart lamps. So they're, you know, making LEDs that are smart and responsive, and they detect the sensitivities and preferences of the users, and they communicate. They have sensors built into those lamps, so those sensors can tell you who's in what room, and they can distinguish the people.
I know a guy named Tom Campbell who's in the board of directors for CES. Ah. And it's amazing what they can do. They have technology where you can paint an LCD on a wall. It's just I can't. He tells me these things, and I go, "No, you're on drugs or something." And he goes, "Well, I'm on drugs, but nobody." So the stuff that's coming out for consumers is almost unimaginable.
Well, you take these kind of LEDs, and they have the ability to drive down to the near ultraviolet, where if you turn that on, you can essentially sterilize a room. Boeing just recently filed for a patent to, you know, sterilize the bathrooms between passengers in 3 minutes using this kind of technology, but those sensors, if somebody hacks that, you don't want them to like be, you know, bathing your cat in ultraviolet.
Yeah, that comes with the category of who'd have thunk it. But, you know, unintended consequences sometimes are good. Yeah, and so you have a situation like CES. I mean, there's all kinds of Internet of Things. I mean, IP's everywhere, and then no one asks about security. It's like, oh, okay, now we got to ask about that security of that LED we painted on the wall. Wait a minute.
Well, you know, these guys, their background is building a product that's differentiated in their market, and security has been an afterthought for them. But with these kinds of technologies, where this kind of personal data or professional data or high-value enterprise data or even government data is at risk, they need to not have to think about security. They just need a way to build it in quickly and easily. So we like to say we give everybody the ability to be a security expert without having to become one.
So let's say it's middle of summer, it's 95 degrees outside, and people go to their web browser and they type in Virgil Security, V as in Victor, V-I-R-G-I-L, security.com. Are there blogs there? Are there white papers or anything they can download, learn more?
So there's a fair bit of background information. We did a couple of sample applications for other developers so they could see what they could build quickly, so they can download those sample applications. And then we point over to open source repositories on GitHub. And those repositories are available for people on Mac, on Windows, on Android, on iOS, on various Linux embedded environments. And we made sure to make those libraries available in the different programming languages they use rather than just C or C++. So you know, you go to virgilsecurity.com, you go to GitHub/virgilsecurity. Either one of those will, you know, get you started.
So your engagement would be a consulting engagement, would be a product-based?
So they use the open source libraries, which are free, and then they pay for that key management in the cloud. For small developers, that starts as little as $49 a year. Most of those developers will never use the number of key API calls that we give them. Larger developers, it scales with their use.
That's interesting. And so one of my Govy listeners could take advantage of this as well as Joe Sixpack down the street, huh?
Absolutely.
That's interesting. Where do you see this market heading in the next 2 or 3 years?
So right now, if you go back to like 2014, of the data breaches that happened that year, 5% of the data was actually encrypted. And like I said earlier, more than half of those breaches started with bad, people doing password harvesting. So if you move just in the direction of the passwordless authentication, that changes the entire economics of hacking. If you break into something and all you can steal is somebody's public key, it was public. There's nothing new. You can't take that key and reuse it on services everywhere. Right now, you break in, you can steal millions of sets of credentials and reuse them around the web. By going to a passwordless authentication model, you can only ever steal one person's information at a time, and it changes the economics from wholesale to retail. Similarly, if you go to the cryptographic signing, that makes sure that no one can push bad firmware to your products. Those products include, the average car has 40 CPUs in it. There's 100 million cars. 4 billion opportunities to push bad firmware to cars every year right now.
IoT of headaches is what I think it's going to be. Let's take a little break and come back. We're going to talk more about being an entrepreneur in this town and how you take an idea and how you actually put it in work boots. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's show is kind of an unusual show. Rather than one specific topic and doing a deep dive into something like SharePoint or maybe Salesforce, we have brought in three entrepreneurs who have solutions for my listeners, and we've talked about different things, mostly involved with cybersecurity. And what I wanted to do now is I've got all three in the studio here. I just want to open up to maybe a discussion like a roundtable on being an entrepreneur. And what if you're listening to the show and you're working for the federal government and you got an idea for something, or you're listening to the show and you're working for a commercial company, you have an idea for something, maybe cybersecurity, maybe mobile, and what's the next step? And is it a good idea to go off on your own or bad idea? And George, so if my daughter sat down and had a cup of coffee with you and said, I have an idea for mobile security, would you tell her to head for the hills, or what's the next step for something like that?
Well, it's a very big next step, I think, going from I work for a company, I get paid, regardless of what happens, to now I'm off on my own. Somehow I have to manage to pay my bills while I'm building these technologies, and then I have to employ people to do business things and sales and such. So, it's a very big leap of faith to take, but I definitely think that it's worth the risk to have the possibility that your vision will become a great game changer in the world.
So I'm going to name a website, and you tell me everything about the website, okay? The name of the website is Mach37.com. So what is it, and why should my listeners care?
Gotcha. So Mach 37 for me was an opportunity as a technical expert to get business chops. So what they do is they offer roughly a 14-week program. It comes with a $50,000 investment into your company, and that gives you the time and opportunity to learn what does it actually take to go from maybe a solid idea or a proof of concept to a fully polished business plan. Actually validate, hey, what value are you providing to your customers? Who is your real customer? And for us, that was everything. We had a solid idea. We were in many ways a solution in search of a problem, and Mach 37 Cybersecurity Accelerator gave us those answers.
So Michael, Mach 37 has been around since 2013, 29 new companies came out of that. Companies like General Dynamics are funding it. So why would a big dog like General Dynamics worry about little puppies? Little startup ideas.
Fundamentally, the next technologies are almost always coming out of startups and, much less frequently out of a big company. And particularly when you're in a space like cybersecurity, there are 100 good ideas that might work. And, if you let 100 startups go start those ideas and run them to ground for a year and see if there's a market, see if the technology works, you can actually let the market choose the technology that's working. And then GD can step in later. And, if they have early access and early visibility into the trends, they'll be the experts in that space.
GDIT, and it stands for General. So George, so General Dynamics looks at you, you got a proposal, and they go, she seems pretty smart, got a good idea. We'll give her some money and see what happens. And so how long does this process take? Take a year, 2 years, 1 year? What's the life cycle for something like this whole startup idea and then getting into Mach 37?
Well, for me, it was actually a really long process. I had been doing security research around mobile for a while, did my open source DARPA project, and had started my own, one person consulting firm. But like I said, I didn't really have the business chops, so I was kind of floundering, just doing well enough to not have to go back to work, not making that, I guess, hockey stick up and to the right that you want from a startup of lots of sales, lots of progress. So finding Mach 37 and being able to make that transition was a real lifesaver and game changer for me, that it gave me help in those areas that I didn't even know that I didn't know about them yet.
Innovation in work boots. So tell me, Kyle, look around town here. You have groups like 1776. Tech has got 1901 group. There's a place in Crystal City, of all things, called the Eastern Foundry. So did you look at those as well? Or did you just laser focus? Did you right go to Mach 37? Or how did that happen?
Absolutely. So our company itself came out of Baltimore. So we're not even a Virginia company per se. But when we took a look at the opportunities of, you know, we believed we had a solid technology, and we kind of wanted to reach that escaping velocity. That's what Mach 37, advertises. Hey, let us help you break through some of those, walls or across those chasms that you're going to run into. And it was the right answer for us. The combination between the solid management team, the resources, their STARS network, the mentor network that Mach 37 offers to us as, entrepreneurs. I mean, all of those calculated into our decision to go with Mach 37. Not saying that some of the other programs aren't equally great, but at the time, that was the right decision for us.
You know, there may be people out there similar to Georgia who have real strong skill set, intelligent, hardworking, and maybe working so hard they're in a silo and they don't realize how valuable the skill set is. And they may not realize how really valuable, maybe, oh, I'm just worth X, but maybe if you broaden your and have a mentor, the mentor can say, hey, you know, Georgia, you're really worth a whole lot more than that, and maybe you should, and you may not even realize it. That's real strange. So, Michael, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
RSA, anything good come out of it in last week?
We were actually not exhibiting at RSA. We view ourselves more as an application security company than a cybersecurity company, but we did speak on a panel there about the technology for Internet of Things. We got to point to a Fairchild article that was calling for 45 trillion devices rather than 20 billion.
This is too much for me. I can't figure this out.
Yeah, so, trillion, 45 trillion might be optimistic. I mean, they're talking about putting IoT technologies in literally every pill that you swallow. But, for us, there's a lot of social credibility by, being at RSA, speaking at RSA. When you're a startup, you look for every crumb of credibility that you can claim, and you lay a trail of crumbs so that when people start to look at you later, they see that you've been there, you've been in the space, you've been out there. So for us, it was about maintaining, establishing credibility and meeting some good people.
So, George, this technology is going everywhere, IoT here and security and everything. There's something starting off in Texas called South by Southwest. So anything new? Is that something of interest to you? Do you follow this? Is that of any value for a cybersecurity professional like you?
It absolutely is. I feel like I kind of pigeonholed myself for a long time, always speaking, I guess, to other information security professionals, other security researchers, whereas the bigger market for me certainly is with people who may not even think too much about security at all, much less the hacker community. So those wider range things that started out as a music festival only, South by Southwest, and now has taken on a lot of, I guess, startup panels there as well. I think things like that would definitely be, like Michael said, great social credibility.
Michael earlier was talking about he happened to know a little bit about biology and he stumbled on application. And so this whole breadth of knowledge, in my world, it's called the strength of a weak network. The weak, hey, I'm reading books about Frederick the Great. What's that got to do? Maybe it's got something to do with cybersecurity. It broadens it and broadens it. So, Kyle, where do you see your company in 5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. In 5 years from right now, we kind of have this crawl, walk, run mentality. We're looking at managed service providers. But 5 years from now, we'd actually scale from these managed security providers or MSSPs into the enterprise market. So, we find ourselves not just having our own product, but complementing other endpoint products, whether that be antivirus or some of the air quote next generation AV.
In this town, they talk about co-opetition, who you compete with, who you don't compete with. I was at an event on Tuesday with a company that invited all its competitors in. It was kind of strange. And I was talking to people there. So Michael, who's your competitor or competition or you work?
There is competition in our space. A lot of the competition comes back to people trying to just make their own build buy decision. There are open source libraries that give you some of this. Like we said, PGP is 20 years old. People still can't use it. And then there are other.
After all, it's just pretty good.
It's just pretty good. Even Phil Zimmerman quit using it. He invented it. But, you know, interestingly, one of the investors in PGP invested in us. So, you know, they think we have a better shot at solving the problem than they did.
Remember, he sat around the kitchen table with his mom and came up with it years ago. Anyway.
Right. But and I've totally lost the question.
We're just talking about your competitors.
The competitors. So a lot of it is open source libraries. There are large enterprise players. Most of the enterprise players tend to be on a consulting model where they want you to use their technology and pay them to make it work. So you end up with things like the State Department, the Treasury Department are using similar public key and cryptography stuff for their secure email, and they can't exchange email.
Huh. So. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, that's kind of fascinating. So, Georgia, where do you see your company head the next 5 years?
Well, I see us really changing the state of security. I think that, you know, as mobile devices are becoming the norm, I mean, we've still got, you know, our PCs and our laptops. But I think as people are buying new devices, they're going more for like a tablet that has, you know, a lot of horsepower, or, you know, the new TVs that you're getting are smart TVs. The new cars you're getting now have, you know, telematics in them. As we've seen, you know, they can be spoken to via a cell tower, much as your phone can. So I think as, you know, the landscape changes, the need for the Shavira products will become paramount, because it is, you know, the way to understand your risks and mitigate your risks and be able to tell, like, if your security products are doing a good job, particularly around mobile. So I think, you know, it's going to become a big player.
Watching the Watchman, that's really good. Well, I'd like to thank all three of my guests today. We have an unusual show. We brought in three people who have innovation ideas for my listeners to help increase their, probably their security status in this particular category. And the theme here is Mach 37, because they got their, I guess, their grounding in a place called Mach 37 out in Reston. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.